behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. It's been a while since I last spoke to Steve Harmschild from Lanikai Brewing in Hawaii, but I felt like it was time to talk again, because by the time you hear this interview, he will be in Australia. Yep, Steve has decided to send some of his most experimental and intriguing beers to Australia, his Hawaiian Wild Ale series. So to find out what the man that never sleeps has been up to since we last spoke, welcome back to the Beer Healer Interviews, Steve Harmschild.
Right on. Thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it.
Oh, mate, pleasure's all mine. Welcome back. Are you excited about coming out to Australia?
Oh, for so many reasons. One, there's just so many different breweries and distilleries and wineries and restaurants that I'm very excited to check out. Second, you know, there's just so many friends down there that I've made over the years drinking beer with that I haven't had a chance to, you know, to meet and see. And then third, you know, getting my beer into the market down in Australia has been a dream for a long time. And, you know, us Islanders need to stick together. So I'm very excited to be down there. And hopefully there'll be a couple swells and I can catch some waves while I'm there too.
Sweet. Have you been to Australia before?
No, this will be my very first visit.
Oh, awesome. You're going to bloody love it because we've read a few times and from what I know of you, some of your great loves are, you know, all the weird and wonderful tastes and experiences with food and drink and the water. So it is going to suit you down to the ground.
I think it'll be perfect. I think I'll be looking forward to my next trip before I even leave there.
Nice. And as you said, one of the reasons for your trip is to share your new Hawaiian wild ales with Aussie drinkers. You describe them as part mad science, part romance, and 100% island inspired. I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, a lot of people, wild ales are an obscure category of beer. And a lot of people just make the assumption that they're all sour. But, you know, they can be, but they don't have to be. So wild ales, specifically the style of wild ales that we create, uses native Hawaiian yeast and bacteria to ferment all of our beers, and then we try to get into as much passion and art and detail as we can with them, and then, you know, age them over different Hawaii agricultural products as well to make, in our version, what we believe to be an authentic Hawaiian beer.
Absolutely.
So those are the beers that I've been working on passionately for, you know, it took about 3 years really to get them up and running and understand them and capture all the yeast and bacteria. And it's just myself and my brew staff and the rest of our employees here at Lanikai just love them. And so we're really excited to start sharing them all over the world.
Yeah. And look, this whole thing about utilizing the natural surroundings is really on trend these days in brewing. But can you just go pretty simple? Because I'm a simple man. Can you go and explain to me how the yeast that you might collect in Hawaii might differ from, say, me down here at the shack doing something similar in my backyard here? Is the difference between the two yeast collections going to be really subtle or a major difference?
You know, it's going to be likely a major difference.
Okay.
Because in honesty, what you're collecting is not just a single organism or just a single, you know, gene of a yeast. You're often collecting mixed populations of yeast and bacteria. And depending on the environmental conditions, so that could be what your wort is made out of or what ingredients that you're adding to it, those things could express themselves in different ways. So we can go and do a wild yeast capture and cool ship a beer in the same place and we'll not get the same flavors out of it. So they could be distinctly different. So every single one of these you make is a brand new adventure in brewing along the way. And that's what keeps it fun. Yeah. What makes it difficult is not, you know, not all yeast and bacteria that you capture, number one, produce alcohol, and then number two, produce flavor. So finding that balance of a wild strain that produces alcohol and flavor is part of that luck and science that mixes together.
Yeah, because I think last time we spoke, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you had sort of set out to collect maybe 80 samples of yeast or thereabouts. You sort of got 7 beers and used a handful of different yeasts in those beers. So does that mean that a lot of them have failed, or does that mean there's just more to come with different styles of yeast?
Both. I mean, when I initially started this process, and I guess what makes our process different than a lot of other brewers is a lot of brewers will just use the yeast and bacteria that is within their brewery that's stored in the barrels or in the walls, and just use the things that are native within their, you know, their warehouse, their facility, their brewery. What we do is more bioprospecting. So we're going out into nature and, you know, whether I'm going to the volcano during eruption or going to a beach or a rainforest, we're trying to capture the different yeast and bacteria straight from nature in those places. So even within that, there's like a difference between all of that. We've done over 100, probably approaching 120 captures by now.
Wow.
And in our old days, kind of when we first started the program, we had a ridiculous failure rate, almost 90%. So 9 out of 10 beers that we were trying to make were failing.
Shit.
And so it was crazy. So, but you know, then you'd get this glimmer of light where the one was just amazing. So then I started traveling within all my work travels. I'm fortunate to know a lot of wild beer makers throughout the United States and other areas as well. So I'd sit down and talk with them about trying to figure out, you know, how we do it and how we can improve our likelihoods. And most of them really, even some of the best wild beer makers in the world basically just said, hey, well, you know, we capture almost everything from within our brewery. So by going out and trying to target and capture what you're looking for, we don't have a lot of advice on that. So at that point, I just started leaning on science and started approaching the capture portion of the yeast different than the making beer portion. So now we're using more scientific approaches to go capture the wild yeast and bacteria. And then we bring them back to the brewery and brew with them. And we might brew with them 3 or 4 times before we've kind of coached the yeast and bacteria to get into a place where it's producing flavors that we like and so forth. And then after we've done that, then we'll go ahead and design a beer around those flavor contributions for it. So we're taking a lot more steps, but as a result, our failure rate has gone down substantially. And it's becoming pretty rare nowadays that we actually have one that fails on us. So we've made tons of improvements, but we still have so much more to learn within this particular process.
So while you're dealing with sort of elements that you can't control and that can be unpredictable, you're putting enough science around it now to make sure that you're actually failing maybe less often.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, there's a financial risk and there's a risk of time and energy every time we go make one of these. And notwithstanding, it is a really good time to go out in the woods and do it. So it's really enjoyable. But at the same time, you know, we're a brewery, employees have to be paid, beer has to be good, consumers have to like it. You know, we have to stay relevant and we have to sell beer. So, you know, it's very important for us that we got over those learning curves, and it took us a while, but you know, we're really proud of the beers that we're creating, and they're distinctly Hawaiian beers, you know, from the land, using the yeast and bacteria. Just you know, we're the first people in Hawaii to really go down this path this aggressively.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Now, you've got 7 beers in the range currently. Are they all coming to Australia with you?
I think we have 5 of the wild ales coming to Australia with us, but right now we have probably about 35 to 40 different ones at this point. So we have gone off the chain and just every chance that we have an open tank, we're making a new blend or a cuvée or coming up with a new one and just experimenting with a new strain. So we've just been at it like total maniacs every opportunity that we've had a chance, and we're growing that portion of our business. I mean, for a lot of reasons. One, people love anything Hawaiian, and this is a unique taste of Hawaii. And two, we're just really passionate about this style of beer, and we really enjoy just the romance of it, not knowing what flavors are going to get contributed to it and how it's going to be. And then, you know, most of the time we just sit back and have a sip of it, and we're just kind of blown away that we're, you know, tasting a time and place in Hawaii that that has never been tasted before.
And so while this is going to be a continuing brand, if you like, the Hawaiian Wild Ales, they're going to obviously change over time due to, you know, the local environment, the seasons, what's available to pick in terms of fruit and how you might mix those with the various yeasts, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. There's absolutely no way we'll be able to create these exact same beers twice.
How cool.
These are all specialty one-offs, and they're all ranging in different sizes. For example, the one that I'm drinking as we speak is a wild golden ale that we aged over organic lychee for 9 months. And it uses three different Hawaiian yeast strains that we have in it. And so even if we use the same technique and go capture in the same areas, the process on how the flavor gets developed is just randomized chance.
It's so cool.
So we'll never be able to create the exact same profile again. Yeah,
so
it's awesome.
Cool. So I've read the descriptions of the beers from that you've been releasing just lately, and they're a really cool mix of like the local yeast and local fruits and aged in this way and that way. And without having drunk any of them, I really like the sound of the Haleakala, if I pronounce it right, named after the active volcano on the Big Island. 8.3%, 6 IBU, aged over strawberries from the slopes of the volcano.
Yeah.
You are going to be having beer nuts losing their mind over this description.
Yeah, so Haleakala is actually in Maui, so slight correction.
Oh, sorry, so I get them mixed up. Yeah, I that's why I was getting confused, because I've done the bike ride down the volcano in Maui, and I was getting confused between visiting the one on the Big Island and doing that. But okay, now you've set me straight.
Yeah, we have a lot of volcanoes in the state, so it's easy to get them confused. But yeah, so that one's on Maui. It's the tallest peak in Maui, and Haleakala is also considered the temple of the sun. So we, for that particular beer, we used, on the slopes of Haleakala, there's a small strawberry farmer. So we grabbed a bunch of strawberries from him, all the grade beer stuff that he couldn't sell in grocery stores and stuff like that. And we aged that particular beer over those strawberries. So it's nice and tart. It's got delicate strawberry florals and taste to it, and just a hint of sourness. It turned out really beautiful. I'm really proud of that one.
It's crazy to think that, as you said before, you can make these beers and never be able to recreate them again. So if you cotton onto something that is just so awesome, I mean, that's both a blessing and also a bit of a heartbreak for you, because you might never ever be able to do that ever again.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what, to me personally, that's what beer is it's an experience. You know, I might sit with you one day and have a beer, and you and I will never share or create that experience again. You and I might have a beer again in a new place, in a new location, under a new conversation, but every experience with beer is a unique one. And whether that's how it's made or who you're with or where you're going with it, to me, that's just part of the evolution of beer.
It's an awesome way of looking at it, isn't it? Like it's, God, I love beer. Sorry, I'm just having a bit of a teary here right now. So, mate, these beers have been released back home for a couple of months now. And how have you gone about educating the local drinkers around these? I mean, are they sort of not too sure, or is there that sense of pride that these have been created from, you know, the earth in their home place, and that they just want to try it just because of that?
Yeah, well, both for sure. I mean, I think by now, you know, we're an established brewery here in Hawaii, and I think people recognize us for more of our experimental styles of a lot of beers that we bring in and the ingredients that we use. So, you know, when we first started explaining to people what the series were, and a lot of people weren't familiar with what a wild ale was, we asked our consumers just to trust us, and, you know, held a couple events at the brewery where they could kind of go through and taste all of it and meet all the people that were making it and the detail that went into it, and just kind of share with them, you know, what we love about the beer, and, oh, that funk that you're tasting, that's from this particular yeast strain that we got off this mango skin, and, you know, and just kind of give them more details so they could really understand what we're going for with it. And so we started most of these beers that we started with, we tried to keep it pretty simple and not use super obscure ingredients. So, you know, the Haleakala with the strawberry is a great example. People can identify and pick out that strawberry flavor within that beer. And so that's something comforting that they can latch onto, versus if we made that same base beer instead of using the strawberries and used an obscure Hawaiian like root or leaf, it might be harder for people to be able to latch onto it and be able to kind of taste what we're trying to explain.
Out of all these beers you've been creating, is there a favorite or is that like trying to name your favorite child?
Yeah, they're all my children. I love all of them. I have a blanket generic statement, but I believe it to be true. You know, my favorite beer is the one in my hand and the one that I'm sharing with somebody.
Yeah,
and that's cool. Always been my favorite beer. But I'm happy to drink everything from, you know, a lager to a wild, funky beer, anything across the board. I just love all aspects of beer. So
yeah, nice.
It's just whichever one that's hit in my mouth.
has one of them been a favorite with the local drinkers at all?
Yeah, I mean, everybody hints something differently because, again, they're not all of them are sour. Some of them are very completely dry and champagne-like. We have one that's the driest, most champagne one. It uses local Dole pineapples. So you don't get any of the sweetness of the pineapple, but you get a lot of the aromas out of it. And so, you know, it's pairing really well with, like, things that are slightly sweet. Like we served it at a Hawaii Food and Wine event last night, and it paired epic with the barbecue that these gourmet chefs were making. Another one that we have uses, we take an old technique. We take these lemons from Kona, and then we soak them in seawater and sea salt, and then put them on the roof of the brewery in glass mason jars. And we left them up there for 8 months. And every week we'd go and rotate these glass jars, and basically, we had our own preservation method with these particular lemons. And then we ended up making a beer out of that one, which is actually going to be coming down to Australia with me. It's called Mele Mele. So it's got lemon and salt contribution to it. So those two particular flavors just do amazing with the fish that we have here in Hawaii, like the mahi fish and some of the delicate white fishes that we have here. Yeah. So those have been favorites, and they do really well with octopus dishes and brining and things like that. So a lot of the local chefs have been cooking pretty aggressively with both of those two beers.
And surely you'll be preparing a beer for the upcoming Spam Jam early next year?
I haven't figured out how to make a spam beer that somebody's going to look at seriously.
No.
But I mean, you know what? Maybe they don't have to look at it seriously. Maybe they can look at it just for fun. But yeah, we'll get to that at some point. We'll get around
maybe,
to that.
Maybe not a beer created with Spam, but maybe something that would pair nicely with that meat that you see guys seem to love so much over there.
Yeah, this island loves their Spam. I mean, it's hilarious. And you go to the grocery store when they're doing like a discount, and there's a limit to how much Spam you can actually buy. It's crazy. Like they might limit you to like four cans. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that, but I'm sitting here with my laptop, and on there is my Spam Jam sticker from a couple of years ago. What a great event. So much fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Mate, what you're doing here with these wild ales is awesome. But I'm sure there are – because there are quite a lot of homebrewers that are listening to this podcast these days, and I'm sure that they're sitting there sort of dreaming of doing similar things themselves in their own sheds. I don't even know if it is possible because, as you said, you know, you've spent a lot of money and time, you know, finding these different yeasts and, you know, working with them and training them to get them to the point that they're at now. But what if someone out there was keen to try and, you know, learn more about the techniques or maybe even try and capture some of their own yeast? Is it possible to do it in a, like a more sort of stripped down simple version?
Oh, 100%. It really just takes confidence in understanding what you're going to do. And then obviously when you're capturing wild things, you want to make sure that they're safe to consume. So as long as your pH is under a certain threshold and you have tools to measure that it's producing alcohol, then more or less you've cut out all of the bad things that are out there that could harm you or cause damage to your body. So then it's just whether or not you like the taste of it or not. So, you know, part of what I hope to do, we have a couple events while I'm down there. We have Bucket Boys on Sunday and then, one up in Brisbane at Brewski as well. So I'll be not only sharing what these beers are and how we made them, but hopefully if anybody wants to talk about like how they can develop their own ways and styles, you know, I'd be happy to share because everything we do is just a technique. And we didn't really have anybody that mentored us through this particular technique. So I attribute a lot of our failure basically because we just didn't have that advice. But you know, you can absolutely do this out of a 5-gallon bucket in your backyard, no matter where you are and on a camping trip or anywhere. And, you know, you might have a large failure rate, but as long as you accept that and accept that, hey, this might not work, then there's no reason not to give it a go. Because quite honestly, you might be pleasantly surprised one day and just end up with like the favorite beer you've ever made. And then you'll never forget that experience on capturing that particular strain and where you were and who you were with. You know, it's telling a story in a bottle. It's really what it's doing.
I have a large failure rate in my homebrew anyway, but that's not just be me. But that's actually pretty cool. I remember seeing a video, one of the, you know, the highly produced TV shows around beer. I forget who it was, but this guy was making a beer and his yeast was coming from a log that he'd found in the forest.
Yep. Yeah.
Just seemed to work. He had a crack and it worked and he liked the taste of it. And so he kept running with it. Were your early sort of experiments pretty simple and crude like that as well?
Yeah, they were. I mean, we just threw everything at it. We tried everything from different flowers and mango skins and areas and trees. And I mean, we tried everything that we could. Anytime that we could make some beer, we would just go make it and really try it out and make it work. So, we definitely started out as crude as can be. And then maybe crude isn't the right word. We just started out with simple building blocks. And then once we started to understand those building blocks of what we're doing and how we're capturing, and most importantly, making sure what you're doing is safe and sanitary, then all of a sudden you have the confidence to go out and really charge at it. You know, I think it's just like anything else, like surfing or anything else. Once you get those basics under your belt, then go for it, you know, go to the level that you're comfortable with. And if you find that, you know, exploring wild ales, Australian wild ales, isn't your style, then that's cool too. You know, it's just it's something to learn for sure. And it for me, it's made me a significantly better brewer.
Yeah, nice. So while you're in Australia, are you catching up with any other sort of like-minded brewers? And I'm thinking, you know, maybe the guys from Dainton or Wildflower or Van Diemen Brewing or anything like that?
I definitely asked some friends to grab some Van Diemen for me because you introduced me to them and nice. I've been following their Facebook and Instagrams and stuff. And I just can't, you know, that's very in alignment with things that I love. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I'll be spending some time in Melbourne with the Edge Brewing team.
Oh, cool.
People that I met out here in Hawaii, and so I'm sure we'll get into a lot of trouble. And I reached out to a handful of other, like Wildflower is obviously very similar yet different to what we're trying to do. So I hope to be able to share some beers over there as well. But, you know, this trip will be really short and I'll be between, you know, Sydney, then Melbourne, then Brisbane, and then I'll be out. So I just have a few days per city and my main goal is really just to go and just share beers with cool people and in a cool new place.
Sounds like the best business trip ever.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So are you bringing any of those amazing yeast strains out with you to maybe, you know, do a bit of a collaboration, or is that maybe for next time?
That might be for next time. I haven't had any set up at this time, and mostly my focus is, since we are launching through distribution down there, mostly my focus is really to get our beers into people's hands and to really explain what we're producing and making so we can keep sending beer down to Australia and then, you know, eventually work towards collaborations and everything as I can come do longer trips and do more events and then, you know, meet brewers that are like-minded and then, you know, find ways to make beer together that represent both of our brands.
Yeah, awesome.
But I think this trip will mostly be just meeting people and going to different places and sharing beer. And that's really the keep it simple focus. Any extra days will be devoted towards ocean time, surfing, hiking, whatever I can get myself into.
Yeah, nice. You talk about, you know, that you're coming out here to promote the distribution. So who are you going through and how, if people sort of want to contact a distributor and try and get these beers into their pubs and bars and that sort of thing?
Oh yeah. So our distributor down there is Northdown. And they're mostly out of Melbourne and they have a good presence in Melbourne and Perth as well. But they're a little bit of everywhere, kind of more boutique on the beer style and bringing in a lot of great beers from the US as well. Or they can just message me through Lonnie Kai Brewing Company's Facebook or Instagram, and I'll find a way to connect them to whoever they want. If they want to come try them or whatever, any questions they have about it, anything like that.
Sounds cool. I'm pretty happy that your distributor is based in Melbourne because that's very close to Tasmania. So there might be a half chance that I might see some of them down here in Hobart.
All right.
But I won't hold my breath.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Cool. And then anybody that's able to make any of these events that we're doing, I think we're going to have 4 or 5 events that they haven't all landed, but I'm also going to bring a bunch of beers that we aren't releasing down there. Some that are from my personal cellar of our beers that we've made and I've been aging for a while, and some kind of new funky ones we've been working on that we haven't released yet. So beyond the ones that will be available for purchase down there, we'll also have some fun ones that, you know, just to share.
Now, speaking of other beers, you know, there is one more thing that I want to follow up with you on for this chat. Since our last chat, I want to know what's happened to the Space beer. Did it ever make it past quality control, and will we see it on shelves?
Yeah. So we, It did. I couldn't be more thrilled than, you know, that was a partnership with the National Aeronautic and Space Association, so NASA, here in the U.S. And, you know, we captured wild strains from the stratosphere, so between 70 and 100,000 feet higher, but that's classified on how high they specifically went. And
really?
Is you it? Know, and then whatever... Yeah, and whatever we got from there, we got mixed populations, of course, like you always do when you do these random samples, and it did go through DNA sequencing a couple of different times to really try to figure out what it was, and it failed DNA sequencing a number of times, and it took a while. So at one point, I called some NASA friends of mine and said, you know, guys, like, you know, the purpose of this beer was to launch it for the 50th anniversary of the moon landing with NASA. And it was getting close to it. And I called the guys and I'm like, you know, guys, I don't know. We can't figure out what this is. I don't know if I can brew with it. You know, I don't know if anybody should taste it. And they're, you know, they responded, hey, we know exactly what this is. And I said, what is it? And they're like, well, we call it a UFO. And then they said, well, you should call it an unidentified fermenting object. And I was like, that is the name right there. So nice. Ultimately we did hit the deadline. We launched it for the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. It turned out great. It turned out different than any other wild beer or clean beer that I've ever made or tasted. So it has a very distinct flavors of funk, and it's doing interesting things with acids. We sent it through package testing. It did pass package testing as well. And we just finished up today bottling another version of it that we tried with kind of more of a Saison style base with it, just to see how we're doing it. So now we're doing a lot of experiments with it to see what kind of flavors we can drive from this out of the world yeast strain that we have. And we do have it on packaging for earlier in the year of 2020. And then after that, assuming people in Australia still want our beers, then we'll be happy to ship it down there and let people taste the little first interplanetary ale.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I'm so happy for you, because I know how much of your heart and soul you put in trying to make that project a success.
Yeah, it was a lot of people, you know, besides me and my entire crew that, you know, takes all of us to make these beers. But we had NASA, we had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of press that was following along in this project. And why our brewery was selected over every other brewery in the world to work with NASA, I'll never know, but I'm so thankful that it worked. And ultimately, relationships, when we went Yeah. And when we went at that project with it, you know, we went with it saying, okay, we know that there's a high likelihood that this will never happen. So we're not going to get our hopes up that this will ever produce a beer that you can consume, that's safe to consume and produces flavor. We knew that. And so we were just ecstatic when it turned out that it did produce flavor and it was very drinkable. And so we really, it was a very cool project to be a part of. And you know, definitely a beer I'll never forget making.
Nice. You got any other crazy ideas in the pipeline?
We always have crazy ideas in the pipeline. We're, you know, we always work with whatever we have here in Hawaii. And, you know, it's coming up on winter, and we have, you know, the North Shore is going to start firing and the massive waves. So we're looking at some cool ships near kind of some of the big wave spots during kind of when the large sets come in and see if those carry any sort of, you know, microcosms across the ocean with them when the storms come. We're looking at doing a lot of different things offshore as well. So not necessarily in the brewery, but on boats and other places. And obviously there's so many corners of these beautiful islands that we haven't had a chance to go capture yeast and bacteria from, you know, whether it's the dry deserts or the different volcanoes. So, I mean, this is just right up our alley where we can just constantly experiment, succeed sometimes, fail sometimes, but ultimately just, you know, continue the passion for what we're doing and you know, the beers that we're trying to represent.
Yeah, nice. So this is obviously very time consuming. You've got a huge passion for it. What happens to the regular beers under the Lanikai label? Are they still going to exist, or are you going to like shift and pivot and just go straight with Hawaiian Wild Ales for everything?
No, we're staying laser focused on everything. So we're maintaining our core brand of our clean beers. So, you know, all of our beers, as you kind of mentioned earlier when we started, are island inspired. So they use local ingredients in all of our beers, all Hawaiian local ingredients. So we're making clean beers that are very approachable for a broad palate of people that don't want to necessarily drink something from space. They just want to sit down and, you know, like sometimes you just want to sit down and have like a Pilsner, you know, and not have to think about the beer and dig into it. And sometimes you're really feeling like some sort of fancy, funky beer. So we just want to be able to give our consumers everything that we can, and whether, you know, not all of the beers that we make are designed for wild or clean. So we're designing them within a particular kind of tranche of the style that we do. So we've been just as aggressive about making our clean beers as we have our wild beers.
No, fair enough. And in my opinion, the best place to enjoy those beers is at your awesome tasting room. And this week I saw that Jetstar had $350 return flights to Hawaii from Melbourne. So maybe if I sort of mention that here, you might get a few Australian beer nuts snapping up those flights and paying a visit to that awesome tasting room of yours.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. I've been looking at the Jetstar and the Qantas, and those deals have been pretty good. Actually, you know, the first time I really started looking at flights, and they're a lot more affordable than I thought they were.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that are interested in it, like Lanakai is about a 40-minute car ride northeast from Waikiki Beach. Easy to get there too, and you go through some beautiful scenery as well.
Yeah, and make a day out of it. I mean, these are some of the most beautiful beaches in the state that are within a walking distance of our brewery, about 2 miles away. So there's no reason not to just go lay on a beautiful beach all day and then come in and tie a couple on and then, you know, take your Uber back and make it home safely.
Yeah, absolutely. And my tip, if you do go out there, you must try the, again, I'll probably ruin the pronunciation, but the Halpea Stout. Are you still making that one?
That actually was the only clean beer that we sent down under as well. It's called Okole Maluna.
Oh,
yeah. So that,
oh, such
those
a good
will be
beer
on the shelves down in Australia as well with that first shipment. And they're going to be available at a lot of the tastings as well. Yeah. So that's a chocolate, creamy coconut imperial stout. And it's the number one cacao in the world is grown here on Oahu. And then we use toasted coconut as well with it. And then it's just a big, creamy coconut stout. And it's, you know, it's, you can even drink it in the summertime, even though it's 10.8%. But I'm not afraid to drink it in the summer, I'll tell you that.
When you and I first met and I did that video interview with you, that was one of the beers that you served up to me from memory. Absolute ripper.
Thank you.
Oh, mate, I'm very excited for you. Unfortunately, we won't be seeing each other face-to-face this time around because when you're in Sydney, I'll be in Orlando for work. I don't know how that one worked out, but it'll be great to touch base at some stage.
I'd love to have a beer and then, you know, we can wave to each other as the planes pass each other. I'll have a beer in my seat. You have a beer in your seat and we can do like a cheers from the plane, you know?
Yeah. Sounds good. Mate, I wish you all the best with the beers. And as you said, they'll be available sort of from mid-November at all good bottle shops. Reach out to the distributor. Their name again?
Northdown.
Northdown, if you are keen to find out exactly where you can find these beers. I'm excited to find them too, mate. They sound absolutely awesome. If you jump on the Lanakai Brewing Facebook page, you'll be able to see a description of seven of the beers. I think you said five of them are coming, so they all sound awesome.
Yeah, and then the next few days, once all the events get locked up, they can come to our Facebook or Instagram and we'll kind of post where all the events are. So if anybody wants to come talk wild beer or just talk surf or just come have a beer, then you know when and where.
Oh, mate, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks very much for joining me. Best of luck with everything coming out to Australia. Okole Maluna.
Okole Maluna back to you. Thank you. Aloha.
Bottoms up. Cheers. Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?